This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hello, this is Spencer Main. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast.
Hi, folks. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 402, and I'm a practical guy. This is a practical show. I do not have a background in military or law enforcement. I am just a regular dude, but I take my Second Amendment rights very seriously. Very seriously, and I talk about them and do this podcast and share my journey with you. In this 402nd episode, I've decided to give it the title, How Would I Do This If I'm Fighting for My Life? And I'll tell you where I got that from, because I've been doing some reading lately, which I love to do, read about guns and training and defensive techniques and things like that. You know, some people like to read about different things. I like to read about guns and self-defense. So I'll get into that a little bit later. Most of you know I ask for voicemails on this show. I ask people to call in feedback, questions, comments, things like that. And I love when I get them. So you probably have a real good chance of making it on my show if you send in a voicemail with a well-thought-out comment or question, even if you want to disagree with me, too. Hey, folks, I don't mind if you disagree with me. That's okay. I'm not right on everything, and you shouldn't agree with everything I say, because if that's the case, you're not thinking for yourself well enough. So hey, that's fine. I'm a big boy. I can take it. Or if you want to agree with me, then I sure like those voicemails better. You'll have a better chance of making the show. No, I'm just kidding. Someday I would love to have an anti-gun person either call in and leave a voicemail, or better yet, interview with me. And let's have a discussion, a factual, sensible, non-emotional discussion. So far, an anti-gunner hasn't taken me up on that. I've been asking for that for years. But you know, probably because they're not listening to this show. Or if they are listening to this show just to see what I'm saying, they probably don't want to call in. They might be afraid. And of course, I would never be mean to them, but we would have a factual discussion and see what happens. But anyway, I got a real good voicemail lately, and let's go ahead and listen to it, and I will respond.
Hey, Bob. My name is Fred. I'm from Vermont. Love your show. I have a question, and with the new Trump administration, you know, some of the podcasts have been asking, what's on your wish list? One of the things that's really on my wish list is the ability to buy a pistol in another state. Right now, I can go into the state of New Hampshire, and I can buy a rifle, I can buy a shotgun, and they go through the exact same national NICS check that they would if I had it shipped to my FFL dealer in Vermont. I don't see what the difference is, since the New Hampshire gun store could also do that same NICS check for a pistol. So I'm not sure how this restriction came about, whether it's a law that was passed or what, and I'm wondering if you have any idea, and I'd like to hear your opinion on it. Thanks a lot, and again, I really enjoy your show.
Hello, Fred. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it, and thanks for the compliment on my show. Yes, Fred, it is a law. It is federal law. The way it came about was the Gun Control Act of 1968, and I'll share with you some information here that I pulled up on the internet from the Gun Control Act of 1968. It says, outside state of residence, a person may not receive a handgun from a non-licensee, who resides in another state, except by will or interstate succession. So you can be willed a gun out of state. Temporary loan or rental for lawful sporting purposes. So you could be loaned a gun, like a rifle or a shotgun, for sporting and hunting. And it says the non-resident may send or deliver the handgun to an FFL in the receiver state. And that's what Fred's asking about here. And it's a felony violation to willfully violate residency laws and things like that. So, yeah, it is law, Fred. And how it came about, this is how it came about. Does it make sense? Absolutely not. It doesn't make any sense that you can go across state lines and buy a rifle or a shotgun, but you can't go across state lines and buy a handgun without going through an FFL dealer. Makes no sense. None whatsoever. Especially, let's think about this, folks. If this is really written, if this was written and really supported by people who are trying to ensure that, oh, let's say somebody doesn't go out and do a bunch of damage or something like that with a gun. You know, rifles and shotguns are more powerful. And as we've seen with some of the mass shootings, a lot of mass shootings have happened with rifles and shotguns, but most shootings in general happen with handguns. Now, it's not the gun. Guns do not cause violence. Guns in the hands of evil people and violent people. It's the people causing the violence, not the gun. So what difference does it make whether it's a rifle, whether it's a shotgun, or whether it's a handgun? They're all deadly weapons. So this is why laws make no sense. Gun control laws, many of them make no sense. I mean, there's over 20,000 gun control laws on the books. And folks, it's not about guns. It's about control. Think about that. It's not about guns. It's about control. So I don't know what people were thinking when they wrote this law. You know, they're making it sound like as if you know, more bad things could happen if handguns were allowed to cross state lines than rifles or shotguns. The fact of the matter is, none of this is bad. If you allow guns to cross state lines, it's not bad. There's nothing bad that's going to happen. It's not proven. It's not been proven that keeping handguns only purchasable in your state of residence, there's no evidence that anybody, in fact, if somebody has some evidence that they can send to me or email to me or even call it in and cite it in a voicemail, I would love to see where this makes any sense whatsoever. Fred has a point here. And, you know, his question is a very good one. But Fred, that's how it came about. The Gun Control Act of 1968, and a lot of this stuff, we need to roll back some of these gun laws. I understand it's on your wish list. I've always wondered why it's that way as well. Now, think about it, folks. It's really not all that bad to have a gun shipped to your federal firearms license dealer. All it means is that you're going to have to pay a transfer fee, a transfer of ownership fee. I know some FFL dealers that do it for as little as $20. I've seen some that charge, you know, $50 to do it. Yeah, you're going to go through a background check. And one of the great things about Texas and many of the other states, you know, Texas here where I live, anybody that holds a license to carry in Texas, you can skip the NICS background checks every time you purchase a gun. They just record your concealed handgun license, or now we call it a license to carry. They just record that number and make a copy of it, and you are good to go. We believe that you're good to go. If you've gone through the background checks, and you've taken the class, and you have the Mother May I permission slip from the GovNet, and the GovNet says you're okay to carry this gun, well, then we believe here in Texas that if the government says you can do it, then you're safe enough to do it. Wow. And you don't have to get the background check. But anyway, I'm kind of making fun of it. But it is kind of cool. It is kind of nice when you buy a gun that we can skip the next background checks. But it does not apply out of state. So I cannot go to another state with my Texas license to carry and purchase a handgun and just take it home. I have to have it shipped to my FFL dealer. So, Fred, thanks for calling in. That was a very good question. Folks, if you want to call into my voicemail, the phone number is 210-646-1727. That's 210, area code, 646-1727. I'd love to hear from you. If some of you have more that you'd like to share on Fred's question, I think that would be great. We would welcome that. But, you know, these laws, keep in mind, they don't make any sense. And when politicians write and pass these laws, they don't make any sense whatsoever. And many of the things that the ATF does, they don't make a whole lot of sense either. There's a lot of inconsistency in what's decided and what's enforced and what is changed. And, you know, many times the ATF will say one thing and then a couple of years or even months later change it and change their mind. This is one of the problems with the way government does things. Now, as far as being on the wish list, yeah, I've heard that. A lot of podcasts have been asking, you know, with the new Trump administration coming in, what is on your firearms wish list? Well, I'll give you my wish list, since Fred brought this up and other podcasts have been talking about this. National reciprocity. And I mean complete national reciprocity. All 50 states honoring a concealed carry permit from any state. So when we get our Mother May I permission cards to carry a gun, it should be just like our driver's license, and it should be good in any of the 50 United States that we travel to, because that's the same as it is with our driver's license, okay? And, you know, our Second Amendment rights are enshrined in the Constitution. Our right to drive is not enshrined in the Constitution. Now, remember, I just chose my words very carefully. I said our right to drive. In other words, drive a vehicle. That's not protected and enshrined in the Constitution. But our Second Amendment rights, they are. So it should be good in all 50 states. That's primarily what is on my wish list. The second thing on my wish list would be the Hearing Protection Act. We need to get that passed. I hope that the Trump administration does. It seems like that they're dropping hints on that. And Donald Trump himself, when he was campaigning, talked about national reciprocity. Talked about it several times. So I'm hoping that that is on their agenda also. Those are my number one and number two wish list items when it comes to guns. Once again, my voicemail, 210-646-1727. I want to remind you that if you're looking for a good holster, Concealment Solutions is an official sponsor of the Handgun World podcast. Right now, I'm using the Outside the Waistband Cobra holster. I competed with it today. I competed in AASA, American Action Shooting Association. I've had Ted Bonnet, the founder, interviewed. I interviewed him, I think, a little over a year ago. You can go back to some of my older episodes. I shoot both IDPA and AASA here in San Antonio, just because the AASA club is based here, and they put on a lot of matches, two and sometimes three per month. And I used my Cobra Outside the Waistband holster made by Jason Christensen at Concealment Solutions. So if you use the coupon code HandgunWorld, you get 10% off your order, except for the belts. HandgunWorld gets you 10% off on anything you get from Concealment Solutions. Hey, the cool thing is, I mentioned this before, but I'll say it again, my Glock 19 with my Trijicon RMR, it fits perfectly in my Cobra Outside the Waistband All Kydex holster. Hey, I don't carry inside the waistband much anymore. The way Jason designs this holster, outside the waistband is just as concealable for me as it is inside the waistband. I may get a little bit of an edge in concealability carrying inside the waist, but not enough to really make a huge difference to justify carrying inside the waist. It's so much more comfortable to be carrying outside the waist. And it's just as fast as when I carried in the appendix position. Because carrying appendix, I had to carry inside the waistband. And it's just as comfortable, and I'm just as fast with it, and I've practiced the draw thousands and thousands of times, and that's the key that you have to do. And so check it out. I got several of these holsters for several of my guns that I like to carry outside the waistband. So I'm going to take just a short break, and I'll be right back with the main topic.
Hello, I'm Rob Morse from the Polite Society Podcast. I took a Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced class with Ben Branham, Bob Main, Chaz Murray, and Tracy Thronberg. I wish every concealed carrier took a class like this one. The class covered both basic shooting skills and advanced topics. Skills like shooting from unusual positions, shooting with one hand while moving, and shooting when in contact with the target. Those are the real skills you want if you were ever forced to use your firearm. I was impressed because I'm not the perfect student. No, far from it. I took the class because I needed competent instructors to teach me and correct my many mistakes. They did that with professional skill. I plan to train with them again.
Okay, I'm back. Now for the main topic. How would I do this if I was fighting for my life? Melody Lauer wrote an article in Lucky Gunner recently that I had a chance to read actually for the second time. And so I'm going to give her credit for that title because that's what she wrote in this article. And I'm going to link to it in the show notes. 5 Ways to Improve Defensive Shooting by Melody Lauer. And you should check it out. It's a very good article. But she talks about how do you practice? You know, do you practice like you're target shooting or do you practice like you're in a fight? I personally, Bob Main, I like to practice and train like I'm going to be in a fight with my gun. In fact, I'll give you an example. Today, when I shot competition, AASA competition, there was one stage where there was a lot of cover available. We had to shoot through windows and we had to shoot through doorways and move around different positions. And I took a little bit longer to shoot the stage than most people. Not because I was slower than them. It's because I was shooting it defensively. I was concentrating on the proper use of cover. First of all, I tried not to crowd cover, not to get too close to it. The last time I shot this almost exact same stage, I got too close to cover. And if you come to a class that I teach with Ben Branham, we'll teach you the proper way to use cover, which is not one way is to don't get too close to it. There's several reasons for that. And then I wasn't exposing too much of my body in the opening of the door or the opening of the window when I was shooting the targets. And, you know, the range safety officer, I didn't do anything unsafe, but when I got done shooting the stage, he asked me, he said, you know, why did you do that? You cost yourself a bunch of time. Because all the other shooters were standing right out in the middle of the doorway and shooting, and right in the middle of the open window and shooting. Well, I don't want to do that, because if I truly have cover or concealment, it doesn't matter if I have cover or concealment. By the way, there's a difference between those. If you don't know, cover stops bullets. Concealment doesn't stop bullets, but it keeps you out of the view of the bad guy. Why would I want to put my entire body right in the middle of a doorway or the middle of a window and start shooting? As soon as I take the first shot, I've just drawn attention to myself big time, haven't I? And if the bad guys have guns, what are they going to do? Aren't they going to start shooting back at me? So I want to be behind that cover or concealment so that they can't see me that well. Yes, it took me a few extra, seconds to shoot that stage, But I did it that way. And so my response to the range safety officer was, I'm trying to shoot this as defensively as possible. I'm practicing it this way because I teach it this way. And he understood. But see, he and many of the other people that I was shooting with, they were there to play the game. And if I wanted to play the game, I would have done the same thing. I would have stood right out. And I would have developed what I think are bad habits. Bad habits, you know. And it's easy to get caught up in the gamesmanship of competition shooting. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I make a decision. I'm going to game the whole match. And I'm going to shoot it to play the game. To get the fastest time possible. That's a lot of fun, folks. Sometimes that's a lot of fun to do that. The majority of the time, I'm shooting it like I would do it if I was in the fight of my life. Now, many of you might be limited by the rules of the range if you're at a public range. Like, for example, most public ranges are not going to let you draw from a holster, or they're not going to let you rapid fire. Sometimes they even prohibit malfunction clearing the proper way, which is really weird. I mean, that's a vital defensive skill, but, you know, I understand. You know, you get all these people from all these different walks of life, and some of them never shot a gun before. Here they are at a public range pressing the trigger for the very first time. I understand that there has to be some strict rules for liability and insurance reasons for these ranges. This is why I highly encourage what I talked about last week, taking training classes, because you can practice these things in a training class, and you typically, most of the time, cannot practice them just going to a regular public range. You know, practice makes permanent, not perfect. I love that. Melody wrote that, and that's true. Practice makes permanent, not perfect. Now, me personally, I've been working a lot lately on shooting my SIG Legion P229. I did that today. Shot my SIG Legion P229. Now, most of you know the first shot on a double action gun like that. The first shot's double action, and then every trigger press after that is single action. And I've been working on that transition, and it's not that bad. It's working out pretty well for me. I don't notice a whole lot of difference between shooting that and shooting my Glock. Again, it's all a matter of how much you practice. But that's how I would fight. See, if I'm going to use this gun, this SIG Legion 229, if I'm going to use this in a fight, my first shot's going to be double action because I'm going to be carrying that gun decocked. So I'm going to practice that way. You know, I'm in a defensive situation, I'm probably not going to have time to cock that hammer back so I can get that single action trigger press. I'm probably not going to have that time in a defensive situation. Let me talk about performing reloads. One of the things I love about AASA competition is that we can reload as we feel it's necessary and pretty much reload anytime we need to in any method that we need to. For example, there were several stages I shot where I reloaded long before I ran out of ammunition, and I went ahead and I dropped the magazine on the ground with ammunition in it. Oh my. What a sin that is, huh? Dropping a magazine on the ground with ammunition in it. That's a sin that's a shooting sin according to many people. Now, I understand. There are times where you want to retain that magazine with ammunition. I'm not a big fan of retaining the magazine because it takes time. It normally takes a whole lot more time to stick that magazine in your pocket because, hey, now maybe some of you listening to this, you're different. You're not like me. I'm an everyday guy. I'm a businessman. I am usually dressed in business casual or regular casual, blue jeans or some kind of cargo pants, and just a loose-fitting shirt. And I don't have dump pouches. I don't have a dump pouch on me where I can just dump magazines. I don't normally do it that way. And it's harder for me to eject the mag, put it in my pocket, and then get another one out and put it in the gun. Okay, and I don't want to do that, you know, funky tactical reload where people will, you know, I've seen people eject the mag or, you know, first they get a new mag, right? They get a new mag out of their mag pouch. Then they eject the old mag and they catch it with part of their hand, and then they stick the the fresh mag into the gun with the same hand, and they're for a while there, they got two magazines in their hand and they're fumbling around, and that takes time. Hey, I'm gonna drop that bad mag or drop the mag with ammo in it, and I'm gonna get a fresh 15 round magazine into that pistol as fast as I can to be able to keep shooting in the fight. Okay, I'm probably going to be reloading on the move. One of the most common mistakes I see students make in our training classes that we teach is coming to a complete stop out in the open and then reload. Now think about that, ladies and gentlemen. Why do you want to come to a complete stop out in the open? A lot of people feel like they have to stop moving to reload their gun. You don't. If you practice it, you don't have to stop. Most of the time people stop is because they haven't practiced that reload enough, and so it's probably easier for them to concentrate and see what they're doing by stopping. But learn to reload on the move. See, if you're reloading, you're not shooting. If you're reloading, your gun is empty, and if it's a bad situation, you don't want your gun to be empty very long, do you? And so why would you want to be out in the open at a complete stop with a gun that either is empty or you're trying to get fresh ammo in it? Precious seconds and split seconds, they mean a lot. I'll never forget when I took Tom Givens' class last March in 2016. One of the things Tom Givens stressed multiple times in that terrific class is stop wasting time. If you're in a fight, if you're in a gunfight, stop wasting time. If you miss, you've wasted time. If your reload is slow, you've wasted time. Time can mean your life. Something else I like to do is when I shoot targets, I like to shoot them different ways. I ask myself, how would I do this if I was fighting for my life? I like to shoot the target different ways. One time I'll shoot it, now I'll just shoot headshots. And then I may pick another spot on the target, like where the bad guy's, heart would be, and I would shoot there. I'll shoot multiple targets, simulating multiple bad guys. Do you practice that? That's what you can't practice at a regular public range. Don't just stay focused on one target at a time if you've got multiple targets, because think about it. You may have multiple bad guys attacking you all at the same time. How are you going to handle that situation? What are you going to do? These are some of the things I like to practice and train. And sometimes, like for example, there was one stage today in competition where I shot them in tactical order. In other words, near to far. Okay, there were some targets that were significantly closer to me than others. Most of the time, now of course, fights don't always go according to plan, right? But most of the time, I'm probably going to think, and it's probably going to make sense, that the person closest to me is going to be the greater threat than the person 10 yards behind him. And so I shot the closer one first. Well, not everybody else did that. Sometimes they shot the farther one first just because, I guess, because they felt like it. I don't know. Not quite sure why a lot of people did that. I shot the closer one first. I like to practice changing body position and changing gun position. So I like to change my body, shoot in different positions, from prone, from crouch, from kneel, moving, turning my body to the side, turning my body to the other side. Don't always square up to your target. Don't always square up to the bad guy. Don't always give him the biggest target to shoot at, the biggest part of your body. Give them the smallest part of your body to shoot at. What about around barricades? Over a barricade, under a barricade, around a barricade? This is how I would do it if I was fighting for my life. And I have a great open mind, ladies and gentlemen. I'm a big advocate of an open mind. Every day I learn something. Every day I learn something from other people, other expert shooters, other expert trainers, other good trainers. And so I'm a sponge. I suck up knowledge. I try to figure out, are there better ways to do what I'm doing and to solve this problem? I have the same attitude when I make modifications on my guns. I ask myself, would I make this modification? Would I use this modification if I was fighting for my life? Does it make sense? Do the sights make sense? Does the magazine release make sense? Think about all the negatives of some of these modifications you make too. I really like the, I got to say, and I don't get paid for what I'm about to say. You know me, I talk about products that I just use or things I'm impressed with because I use them and I test them out. I'm really a big fan of some of the extended magazine releases on the market. I'm a big fan of two of them especially, those by Suarez International and those by Larry Vickers. I have a Glock with Larry Vickers extended mag buttons. And one of the things about the Larry Vickers extended mag buttons and some of the other ones, in fact, I've seen some good information on the ones that Gabe Suarez sells as well, is it makes it easier to hit the mag release, but it avoids accidentally hitting the magazine release. I saw it in competition today. A guy had a SIG pistol, and he gets up to the shooting line. It's his turn to shoot, and the range safety officer says, facing down range, load and make ready. He draws his pistol. He puts a magazine in. He chambers a round. He decocks his SIG double action gun. The range officer says, are you ready? He nods his head. The range officer says, stand by. And then you hear the beep of the timer, right? The guy draws his gun. And guess what the first thing happened was? Magazine comes out of the gun. Now, one of two things happened. He either probably didn't properly seat the magazine. You'll see me when I put a magazine into any handgun. Before I reholster that, I will slap that magazine real hard, even after I have put it in the gun, just to make sure it's seated in there and it's seated completely. So either he didn't do that or he accidentally pressed the mag button, the mag release button, when he drew his gun. I seriously doubt, SIGs are high quality guns. I seriously doubt that he has a malfunctioning mag release button. Slide releases. I'm not a big fan of using the slide release to send the slide home after you chamber, or to chamber around after you reload. Some people like that. Some of the extended slide releases are real good. The Glock ones, the Glock extended slide releases, I don't like. Now, why? Because I've accidentally pressed it, and I've accidentally released the slide when I didn't want to. The one Larry Vickers has designed for Glocks especially is good. It lets me go ahead and hit that slide release if I want to do it that way, or if anybody else wants to do it that way, and it prevents doing it by accident. Base pads. Paul Carlson from the Safety Solutions Academy makes some excellent Plan B base pads for the Smith & Wesson Shield. I love them. I got three of them. Okay, in full disclosure, Paul sent me two to evaluate. I purchased the third one. I paid for it. I really like it. What's the advantage of the Plan B magazines on the Smith & Wesson Shield? Well, first of all, they for sure eject out of that pistol when I want them to. The stock magazines with the Shield don't always come out of there. My hand will sometimes, the bottom of my hand, the fat part of the bottom of my hand, not too fat. I'm not too fat, folks. I'm not too fat. I'm just saying that the bottom part of my hand sometimes stops that magazine from coming out of the pistol. Not with the Plan B. The Plan B also has a nice little ledge in the front of the base pad that kind of gives a little bit more of a positive grip on the Smith & Wesson Shield, because that gun can be slippery. So kudos to Paul for developing the Plan B base pads. ShieldPlanB.com. He didn't pay me to say this. I've tested it. I'm using it. I'm shooting it. I'm saying, I'm talking about it because I believe in it, ladies and gentlemen. Okay? My podcast is mostly listener supported. So I give you a lot of good information that I believe you can use, and it comes from what I test and what I do. Please consider supporting my show. You can do it without spending any extra money. You can go to my Amazon account. Whenever you buy something on Amazon, go to the Handgun World podcast page first, handgunworld.com. Go to my Amazon store and purchase through my affiliate link. Amazon will pay me. You don't have to. You can join the Shooters Club, a great 65-video program that Ben Branham and I have put together for only $8 a month or $75 a year. Or you can sign up to one of our excellent training classes that's probably coming to an area near you real soon. You can check all that stuff out at handgunworld.com. Quick break. I'll be right back.
80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Dianne Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in two other homicides. These two items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, the last segment on how would I do this if I'm fighting for my life. I want to talk about night shooting now. Let's talk about night shooting. We know that most of the defensive shootings occur either in low light or at night. So are you practicing that? You could even practice it during the daytime. Get your flashlight out and draw your gun. You're going to be shooting one-handed, which is why you should be practicing like crazy one-handed. We had another stage at the competition match today where we had to shoot it one-handed with our right hand and one-handed with the left hand. And a lot of righties had some serious problems shooting the stage with their left hand. Why? I guarantee you they don't practice it. Now, I'm not trying to brag, but seven steel targets, and I hit every single one of them the first time with my left hand. And I'm a right-handed shooter. Why? I practice it, folks. Well, you may have to shoot with just one hand. You may have to shoot with your right hand or your left hand and a flashlight in the other hand. Don't get just stuck on one specific flashlight technique, by the way. You know, there's several different flashlight techniques. You know what I think the best flashlight technique is? The one that works, the one that enables you to get it out of your pocket or wherever you carry it, your flashlight carrier, shine that light on the target. The quicker you can get it out, the quicker you can draw your light, shine it on the target, the better off you are. I just got a new flashlight I want to kind of brag about. Again, not a sponsor, but I bought a Streamlight ProTac 2L. A Streamlight ProTac 2L. It's a little bit thinner than most of the lights I've been carrying. It's a little bit thinner. I wanted something a little bit thinner, but it's like 140 or 180 lumens. It's nice and bright. It's got the switch on the tail cap, which I really like. You know, I got to have the switch there. I don't want the switch on the side of the flashlight. I want it so I can turn that light on with my thumb. Okay? I can hit it twice with my thumb and make it a strobe. I can hit it three times and make it a dim light. So I like it. I like it a lot. I also have a Surefire light, and I got a 5.11 tactical light. Practice with all the flashlights. I don't have a light mounted on my gun. If you have a light mounted on your gun, practice with that. How would you use it if you were fighting for your life? Now, this also applies to gun selection. Ask yourself, would I use this gun if I was fighting for my life? If it's the only gun you have, then you're going to say, yes, of course, it's the only gun I have. Train with it. If you choose to carry it and you want to use it to save your life, you better practice with it. How does it fit your hand? How well can you control it? What's the bore axis like? The recoil, the grip shape? Okay? I'm a believer that how the gun sits in your hand does affect how you can control it. I think it does affect how you can control recoil. That's just been my personal experience. I had somebody on Facebook completely disagree with me on that. Well, fine, you can disagree, but, you know, one person's technique doesn't work for everybody. For some people, a gun with a low bore axis works real well for them. Others, it doesn't. Some people actually prefer a gun that sits higher in the hand. There's no one gun that works well for everybody. There's no one grip shape that works well for everybody. For me, the sights come back on target a lot faster when the gun sits lower in my hand. That's just the way it works for me. Okay? The recoil seems a little less too. Now, maybe physically, maybe in terms of the laws of physics, the recoil isn't any less, but it seems to be for me. And that's the most important factors. Do the sights come back on target quicker? Okay, especially that front sight. Now, capacity. Capacity is probably not as important as I originally once thought several years ago. But just learn to fight with the capacity that you have. If you only have 7 or 8 or 9 rounds in the gun, learn to fight with that. If you learn to fight and you know you've only got 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 rounds in that gun, if you know that's all you got, how would you use that gun if you're fighting for your life? What if you have a malfunction? Can you do it quickly? Some people give very inadequate consideration to that. They also give inadequate consideration to their holster or their wardrobe selection. Now, I got to ask you guys a question, okay? Let's all face it. Here's my question. Does carrying a metal or plastic gun pressed up against your body, is that naturally uncomfortable? I answer that question yes. Naturally, most of us are not used to carrying a piece of metal or plastic pressed up against our body, either inside or outside the waistband. We're not used to that. Now, we get used to it when you do it every single day. You get used to it. I've been doing it so long. I've been carrying a gun for so long. I feel kind of naked without it. When I don't feel that plastic, that piece of metal or plastic pressed up against me, there's something wrong. There's something missing. But at first, come on, be honest. When you first start carrying a gun, it feels a little uncomfortable, doesn't it? And it causes some people not to carry it at all. So as I said many times, if you have to downsize your gun to make it a gun that you carry all the time, go for it. Now, when it comes to purchasing a holster also, you get what you pay for. I remember a few years ago when I was interviewing John Hadaway. it was funny. He said, if your holster costs less than lunch, you don't want it. I thought that was pretty good. Of course, I guess it depends on where you eat lunch, right? Are you eating $7 or $8 lunches or are you eating $30 lunches? But you get his point. Most holsters are about, most good, decent, concealed carry holsters are probably about $50 or more. Most of them. You know, add tax and shipping and stuff, and you're probably going to spend at least $50. Most people don't eat $50 lunches. But when it comes to, you know, lugging a gun around every day, the holster and the belt, especially the belt, they're both worth the extra cost. How would you do this? What would you wear? What would you choose if you know you're going to fight for your life? Let's say you get up in the morning and you know that this day you're going to fight for your life with your handgun. Let's say you know an event. You never do, but let's just say, when you get up in the morning, you absolutely know for sure you're going to get in a gunfight today with only your handgun, not an AR or a shotgun. What would you select if you know you're going to fight for your life? If you're normally the kind of person that runs around in sweatpants all the time, or when it's hot outside, you got gym shorts and flip-flops, how are you going to fight for your life? What are you going to do? Have you thought that through? If you're the kind of person wearing sweats or gym shorts and sandals in the summertime, and you got that little tiny pocket 380 in your gym shorts, or ladies, you got that little tiny pocket 380, that pocket size 380 in your purse, how are you going to fight for your life with that? What are you going to do? Have you practiced that out? Have you gone through it? Have you gone through it dry? Have you taken a class on it? For you ladies out there, there are plenty of other ladies teaching classes on purse carry. Have you taken one of those classes? Guys, you know, when you go to a training class, in the summertime, if your typical mode of dress are gym shorts, or in the winter if it's sweatpants, go to the class dressed that way and see how does it all work for you. I saw a great video I'll probably link to in the show notes. Some guys way up north in a bunch of snow and cold, and they're all dressed up in a lot of winter clothing, and they're demonstrating how to get the gun out of their holster with a whole bunch of winter clothes on, a whole bunch of jackets and layers and sweatshirts. I know what that's all about. I grew up in Wisconsin. Of course, when I was growing up in Wisconsin, concealed carry of handguns was not allowed. Open carry was, but nobody did it. Now, of course, Wisconsin is one of the best concealed carry states in the nation. They finally got it right. It took them a while. They were one of the last states to get with the program, but they did. My home state got with the program. But what if you're up there? What if you're living up there, or you're traveling up there, and you got all this winter clothing on? How would you do it if you're going to be in a fight for your life? How would you get the gun out? What if you're driving your car or your truck? Try sitting down in your chair, the seat of your car, the seat of your truck. What about your desk at home or your desk at work? Have you ever thought about how would you fight for your life if you're sitting in a chair anywhere, if you're in your car? Okay? How would you do it? What would you do? You'll find that if you carry behind your strong side hip, and you're sitting in a chair, sometimes that can be a little bit more difficult to draw that gun. Now, that's one of the great things about outside the waistband carry. It's a lot easier for me to draw my Glock 19 or any gun I'm carrying when I'm sitting down, whether it be in my vehicle or whether it be sitting down anywhere else, restaurant or wherever. Outside the waistband carry, it's a lot easier for me to draw from that position. Why? I think about, how would I do this if I was fighting for my life? Okay, I hope I've given you some things to think about. That's about all I wanted to say here. You know, I wanted this to be a relatively brief, hard-hitting podcast. You know, some people, when I did episode 400, they called in voicemail comments saying that I get them thinking when I do this podcast. Now, I know you may not agree with everything I say, but hopefully I get you thinking. That's my primary goal. Get you thinking about, you know, things that maybe you haven't thought about or haven't spent enough time on when carrying a gun for self-defense. Because that's primarily what I'm all about, carrying a gun for self-defense. If you have questions or comments, once again, my voicemail number, 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. With all this said, folks, thanks again for listening. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. This is the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I cannot carry a cop. And there's something I want you to remember. Evil does not exist in the holster. Evil exists in the hearts of men and women. So remember, read your Bible every day, shoot straight, shoot safe. And until next week, I'll talk to you later. Have a good one. Bye. You want to do a good job.